courtside the virtual hardwood, it's the MLSC podcast, episode number 410. Andrew with you once again. I am Andrew in the forum and Andrew MLSC on Twitter. My co-host is Derek. You know him in the forum as DP3 and DP3D4 on Twitter.
No, happy to be here again. I know that this episode is dedicated to the community's NBA 2K23 wish list, and I think that it's going to be a lot of fun to get into the ideas that they have on how to improve that series. But how awesome has it been to get back into NBA Live 96 PC modding?
It's been fantastic. It's been so nostalgic for me. I love that game. I played it so much back in the day. It was the game that led me to find the NLSC. I did not found the NLSC, but I did find it through Alta Vista, not Google, Alta Vista, back in the day, searching for NBA Live 96. That's when I found all the tools that our founders made, the editor that I've been using, the editor that you've been using. And yeah, I just made so many patches, so many mods, or patches they were, as they called them back in the day, roster mods for that game, and now working on another one again. It's so much nostalgia. You have the nostalgia for playing the game, but also for modding the game as well. So it's really cool.
Yeah, so just so people know, Andrew and I all week actually have been connecting using Parsec and playing NBA Live 96 on the same team using a work in progress all-time teams roster. This is a project that I jumped in on and I'm now helping Andrew out with and whatnot, but Andrew's been hosting the PC version of the game, and we both love the presentation, and the games have been an absolute blast. Even though I have a little bit of lag, it's not game-breaking. Actually, I hit a Larry Bird buzzer shot 3 that made the top 10 this week on NBA Live 96, but those games, that experience, playing co-op, and just being able to do that when I don't even own the PC version of the game, it's just been wild. And it's just been a lot of fun.
You know, it's dated, obviously. Live 95 and 96 are classics, but they are admittedly dated. But you and I, we can go back and we can enjoy those games, which we've been doing. And to play them in a new way with this roster, and it was just something I started on a whim, looking at what I could do with it. And then, because with those games, there's far less ratings, far less attributes to work with. You don't have to worry about face textures. You've got all the pre-made faces that you can assign in the editor, which are the same ones that you can give created players. So when we do have to add players through the create a player functionality, they will blend in very well, seamlessly, in fact, with the original players. But it comes together fairly quickly, and that's what I love about those rosters. And I'm not abandoning other games. There's other projects I want to work on. But this is one, the rosters can come together very quickly. And we've already got pretty complete Bulls and Celtics, all-time Bulls, all-time Celtics rosters. And we played a game, Bulls versus Celtics, and what a heartbreaking loss with Bob Cousy, of all players. Of course, no three-point line back in those days, but he could shoot, and nailing that three-pointer in overtime to beat us.
Yeah, he was heavily guarded on that, too. And what's sad is it could have been a storybook ending for us when Jordan took that jumper at the end of regulation. That would have given us the win, and it bricked. Very unlike MJ, but no, that was heartbreaking. So basically right now, the way we're working, and we will be posting on the NLSC, we'll be creating a thread on this when we progress a little bit further, but Andrew's going through and, you know, making the players, renaming them, doing their ratings and whatnot, making sure they look right, like giving Derrick Rose the correct hairdo, etc. And I'm making portraits. Right now I'm working on the large portraits for the players, and I completed Michael Jordan and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And then I'm going to work through and start on the medium portraits in the game and then do the small ones. So it's definitely a big project in that regard, but it's really rewarding seeing those portraits in the game because of the amazing presentation.
The presentation, that gold, those gold menus, of course I love the music, that jazzy soundtrack, as I've mentioned on many occasions, but I just love that presentation of 96. It does come down to nostalgia, but I do believe it is a fantastic design regardless of that. With the portraits, it's very exciting because back in the day, we had Pickhead is the editor for the portraits. It's compatible with 95, 96, and 97, and we never were able to really do much with it. It was really more for exporting the portraits, which we'd use actually for later games. We'd take those portraits and make portrait updates for games like Live 2005, 06, 07, 08, because they were very useful to pull out of there, pull out of 95, 96, and 97, and just remove the backgrounds and put them, give them a transparent background and put them in a new game. But we could never really import them properly. And you found what we found, which is that those files are very sensitive, that file format. You've got to get the right color depth and the right bitmap rate and everything. And man, is it sensitive, but you just did the fantastic job on... You had so many goes at that. You know, people really need to understand how dedicated Derek is to getting something to work, because you were just sending me file after file, and you finally got it.
We must have tried over 100 Jordans.
Yeah,
like
easily.
Over 100 drafts of Jordan. And it's a combination of using Paint.net, Photoshop, and now GIMP is in the mix. But really what it comes down to is the NBA Live 96 portraits are in 8-bit, 80 colors, and at a specific resolution. And if you don't match that almost exactly, it's not going to work in the game. And it's also the most sensitive portraits I have ever worked with. And remember, I made hundreds of them for, you know, NBA 2K17 and whatnot, and they always came out clean. But it doesn't matter if, you know, you look at a portrait and you see no border in Photoshop or Paint.net, wherever you're editing it, or like in your photo viewer, there will still be a border. Often there will still be a border that still shows up in NBA Live 96 when the portrait is imported. So there's this whole process of having to, you know, open it and edit in Paint.net, then bringing it over to Photoshop and changing it to an indexed file, bitmap, 8-bit, 80 colors, do a little bit more editing, export it. And then you can't just export it out of Photoshop and get it to work, because then it messes up in the game. Then I have to open it back up again in Paint.net and save it and export it again, and then, you know, pass it on to you to try it in the game. And it was just such a process. I think it took me like 3 days, I want to say, of hours each day trying to figure out how to get the portrait to look good. And it came out great in the game. And I am probably the most proud I've been of a portrait just because of that struggle. But yeah, I'm going to work through those now that I have a better system down, and we'll see how many we can get done for the roster. But I'm excited, and I think the community, a bunch of people in the community that still own the Live 96 PC version will love that roster.
I mean, it's obviously a very niche project compared to, say, a 2K22 project, obviously, or even a 2K21, 2K20, or indeed 2K19, which you're also working on projects for that, the retro rosters. Of course, we chatted to Stildo last week about that, among other things, including the epic fight he had with the epic battles. Go back and listen to that, episode 409. But so much sensitivity, as you said, with those file formats, trying to get it right. And just if it picks up a reflection or a certain color in the jerseys, it'll make it transparent. So suddenly you've got these holes in the player's head or their jersey.
Yeah, that was one of the hardest parts, too, is the fact that, like, I sent you that Kareem at first, and he had a little bit of a glare on his bald head. And in those glare spots, they ended up becoming transparent. And he also had transparency on the sleeves and neck sleeves, the armholes and his neck of his jersey. So I had to go in there and do a bunch more edits that took over an hour in order to clean that up, in order to change the color ever so slightly, or, you know, take parts of his skin from another part of his head and put it over that, the reflection, etc., in order to make it work in the game. And I actually think that's a workable portrait now. I think it looks pretty good. I'll probably be sharing that on my D4 3G handle at some point, either today or tomorrow. But I do think that it's coming together nicely. For NBA 2K19, on the Retro Seasons roster project, we're also looking at getting small portraits into the roster. And we did get permission from the URB team, from Sco Adam, to use the portraits that are in that roster. So that's definitely going to be helpful for us, and we can start going through and adding portraits. And I think that that definitely helps with authenticity and just kind of the overall presentation of the roster. I think those portraits are incredibly helpful.
Yeah, those little details really just make the roster, because it's one of those things that, and you know, as a mod user as well as a modder yourself, that when you get a mod and you go through it and you just see all those little small details that people have managed to do look, when you make something special with a mod, you know, we made these great mods for NBA Live 96 PC back in the day, these retro roster mods and current roster updates and things like that, and they were fun, and it was still a novelty to see the players being replaced and to play with old school rosters, but you had those limitations on what we could do with the art files, and that lasted for quite a long time, probably till like about the Live 2003 when they brought in custom art. That was kind of the pinnacle of NBA Live modding, that 2003 through to 06, really. And just when we really started to make more in-depth roster mods. And you would actually include faces, not just created faces for players from the in-game creation tools, but that it became standard to include custom face files for players. Especially because back in the day also, hosting, the file hosting was an issue, and being able to distribute a large file over dial-up, you kind of wanted to download individual mods and then put them together. The fact that we can do these great big projects now, you know, it speaks to how far the internet has come, how far file hosting services have come, and of course we offer file hosting with the NLSC as well, but internet speeds and everything, yes, even Australian internet speeds are good enough to download a large project, where back in the day on dial-up, you couldn't do it because you'd be downloading this big file, and then somebody picks up the phone, Derek, and suddenly, this great mod you've been downloading, you're going to start all over again.
Yeah, it's wild how times have changed. That's the thing, like I said at the top of the podcast, I don't even own NBA Live 96 PC right now, and I'm able to, you know, you connect with me on Parsec, and then I'm watching your computer, and you're going into the game so I can see how the portrait looks, etc. I'm using PicEd to try the imports on my end to make sure they look good in the editor before I, you know, send the file over to you, etc. It is absolutely wild, but I do want to give credit to the Hawks and the Sco Adams of the world, and anybody that works on the portraits for those huge roster projects for NBA 2K13, 2K14, 2K12, etc. Because I'm going through these, and I took the responsibility for on the NBA 2K19 retro roster team to extract all the portraits and ready them for the single season rosters. And there's about 7,000 portraits in that game. I kid you not, like about 7,000. And I spent hours upon hours today just going through them, seeing which ones we need and extracting them. And I only got through about 2,000 of them. But it is absolutely wild the amount of work that has gone into those two huge projects for for NBA 2K12, 2K13, and 2K14. It's just big applause to all those that were involved.
Absolutely. And again, just something we couldn't do back in the day, because you look at the size of the archives that you download, and they're split up into multiple parts as it is. But something that they've done, which I'm going to be doing with future large projects of mine, not so much 96 because it's a much smaller, the files we're working with are much smaller, but when we're looking at the 2K11 and games like that, is being able to give people parts that they can download and never have to download again, and then just re-download the updated part. Because when I was doing my rosters for 2005 to 08 for PC, NBA Live, that is, I was basically getting people to download the whole mod all over again. And admittedly, that was only about 200 megabytes, which even then wasn't that much, and now is just nothing. That'll come down in a few seconds for most people with a fast connection, or certainly, you know, no more than a couple of minutes, tops. But that's so important to be able to provide a mod that you can just download a bunch of parts once and then just get those updates through that the new updated parts, and it's not a huge download each and every time.
Right. I thought I wanted to applaud Ken on that, actually, Stildo33, who's also doing that. And I believe that's also the routine that 2K13, 2K14 roster makers used, you know, Hawk and Sco Adam and whatnot, is they say, hey, if you've already downloaded this part, you don't need to download it again. Just download these update files. So I definitely agree. I think that that's a great way to go about it. That way people don't have to spend all those. Not everybody's internet is equal, as we know, via Parsec, so yeah. People don't have to spend all that time, you know, downloading something they've already got. So I definitely think that's a good thing. I did want to say, though, I was sad that you had to drop out of the NBA Jam on Fire Edition tournament. The tournament has gone swimmingly well. It's just gone really well so far. We're about done the first round. Stildo and Kid Cash still need to finish their first round series, but 707, who's using the Spurs, has moved on to the second round after beating B-Ball Video Games, who's using the Bulls. And we have On the other end, I moved on after, and I'm using the Blazers, so I'm in the second round now. I was playing Trace O'I, who was using the Heat, and Tecmo Bowl, and QB1120, Q on the NLSC forum, went the distance in their series. It went the full five games, and Tecmo Bowl won that series 3-2. What an exciting series that was. It was tied 50-50 going into the fourth quarter, and it was really intense. Emotions were high. It was just really awesome, and that's what the tournament's all about. So it's been a really fun tournament, and I think it's going very well.
It is. We talked about how well the NBA Live 10 tournament went. It did stretch out a little bit longer than we first anticipated, because those games are longer to play with NBA Live 10, even with the 5 minute quarters. Was it 5 or 6 minute quarters we were playing, actually?
6 minutes.
Six minutes, that's right. So it does take a little bit more time. People have got their other responsibilities, so it did stretch out a little bit longer than we perhaps hoped, but it still progressed quite nicely, and people had fun, a lot of fun, and people enjoyed watching the footage as well. Same thing is happening with the OFE tournament, people really enjoying that, getting into the footage. And of course, being shorter games, you don't even have to go through the games. You can put up that whole game, and it's not a long watch to do.
Yeah, each video is about 12 minutes long, and that's perfect. And everybody's been a great sport. At B-Ball Video Games, had a blast in his series against 707. Just good sportsmanship both ways. Even though he got swept in the series, all the games were really close, and he was just like, this is really fun. And that's what it's all about. You know, people are having fun, and yes, it is going to get competitive and whatnot, but it's about that overall experience and creating, you know, overall positive memories and whatnot. So we did have one of the highlights from the tournament make it into the NLSC top 10 plays of the week in the most recent edition. It was Kobe Bryant through the legs facing the other way, alley-oop to Magic Johnson. And that was done by Tecmo Bowl GGL. So I love getting those highlights in the top 10. I luckily, for the most part, have a front row seat to every single game in the tournament because I'm hosting most of them. So I've seen all the great action, and I can catch those highlights.
And on the subject of the top 10 this week, top 10's always fun. You know, we've said that before, but another very strong countdown this week, I thought.
A lot of variety. A lot of different games, a lot of different highlights. You had your Magic Johnson halftime buzzer beater with that awesome Chick Kern audio that you put in there over the highlight, which I just think went with it perfectly.
I was
really
pleased
adds
with that. I was very pleased with that, yeah.
Yeah, it was fantastic. We had Teddy Bear the Gamer in there, and that was special and definitely deserving of the number one spot. We had a Corey Maggette NBA Live 06 poster dunk on Chris Mim, which looked absolutely fantastic. Those dunks still look good from NBA Live 06, whether it's the PlayStation 2 version or like the Xbox 360 version and whatnot. We had Winner 77 from NBA 2K14, alley-oop. That was a great play. VF Baller showed up a couple times in the countdown. I think that it was a really strong countdown. And like you had stated before the podcast, what's really cool about the top 10 is that people are sending in highlights from all different games. We're not just getting 2K22, even though there's usually a couple highlights in there for 2K22, but we're getting games from the 90s, from the 2000s, from the 2010s and whatnot. And I just think it really adds to the fun of not only me putting together the top 10, like it makes it more fun for me, but for the audience that gets to view it.
No question. And it also makes me feel less weird for going back and playing old games, which I know I shouldn't, because it's something I've done on and off throughout the years. As I've said before, not as often in recent years because of my dedication to the grindy modes of my team or my career, but it is something that I used to love doing, and I've been doing a lot over the past 12 months especially, and even to this week, of course, going back and playing 96 and 2K17 and even a bit of 2K14 again last night, and really enjoying it. And it's, you know, play what you want to play, as we've said so many times before, but clearly people are doing that and going back to old favorites, or sticking with an old favorite if they're not really feeling the new game, and still producing these wonderful highlights. And it's, you don't need, as we've said before, you don't need to be on the latest game to produce a fun moment, either because you can have a spectacular moment even with a more primitive animation, or a game winner is a game winner. Like a big clutch play, it doesn't matter the game. A big buzzer beater is a big buzzer beater.
Right, that's why I said, you know, basically any game could make it into the top 10, right? I mean, you could play double
kids sports basketball. Kids football.
Right, right. Yeah, hey, it could go in there. Hey, I still have those highlights. Don't tempt me. I could totally put kids sports highlights, kids sports basketball in there, maybe with my Klay Thompson, Ginger
Ginger
Klay
Klay.
half-court shot that I made. But no, any game can really make it in. The moment matters. You know what I mean? The moment where something happens and how it happens and whatnot. So I had a question for you, though, before we get to people's 2K23 wish list. What are your thoughts of co-op on NBA Live 96?
You know, it's something that we have to adjust to. Obviously, you've got that little bit of lag. We're playing with modern controllers where it's because we've got the two different controllers. If you try and have that third button, it thinks it's on that second controller. So we've got to use the full turbo, the full motion. What's it? What do they call it? Full movement for turbo. Basically, if you've got
It's
the
basically you're turboing all over the floor, right?
yeah, unless you've got very slight movement of the stick, then you're going to be running as if you're holding down turbo all the time, which does result in a lot of fouls. But it's a lot of fun. You know, I played a lot of solo NBA 11 and 6 PC, or played, well, I played co-op with my cousin. We mostly played 95 co-op. It worked a little bit better with the with co-op for some reason back in the day. I can't remember why. Or maybe we liked 95 a little bit better because of the team we were playing with. But either way, I'm really enjoying it. You know, it's something that we could make a series out of, especially with the all-time teams roster when that comes together.
Right, I was thinking about actually running a tournament with the all-time teams roster once it's finished.
Oh,
I
yeah.
think that would be a lot of fun. And I think that that game would even work better for people with weaker internets based on the amount of resources that the game takes. It's a little bit less in that regard. So I think that it might even work better and have everybody be able to join in on that tournament. One thing that I think is really underrated on NBA Live 96 PC is getting blocks at the rim. Blocking dunks, stopping stuff at the rim. That is one of my most favorite things about playing that game is playing defense. I think playing defense is incredibly fun on that game. I know there's a lot of video games where the offense is too overpowering, so defense isn't that fun, or the defensive mechanics aren't very good, but I absolutely love the way you have to play defense and can play defense in NBA Live 96.
And of course, it doesn't actually recognize the legal defense rule, so you can just park in the lane if you want to get rebounds and blocks, if you want to cheese it. Yeah.
I was doing that a little bit, depending on who had the ball on the perimeter. I was kind of parking and waiting for them to come in because going by the tendencies, like the way the players play, you kind of get an idea of who's going to go to the hoop and who's not. Like when we were playing Kobe and he was just rifling from the outside.
Oh, yeah.
So
Yeah.
like I didn't have to worry about that with Kobe, but yeah, no, I think it's great. And yeah, the top 10, it's been great. The NBA Jam on Fire Edition tournament, great. The modding has been a lot of fun lately, and yeah, I think this is going to be a good year.
No doubt. And, you know, I haven't done a lot of modding for Live 96 PC for a long time. So I was kind of proud of myself, to be honest, as far as getting the ratings right, because there's still a little bit of tweaking to do here and there. But I feel like the players are playing, as much as you can for the primitive AI of the time, I feel like the players are playing pretty well.
They are. That's great. I mean, you had, when we were playing against the Celtics and Kevin McHale was stopping and popping just like around that mid-range area, and he was playing in his areas where he would play like in real life. I thought that was really a nice touch, and using the players feels right, et cetera. And I like the way that you made them look, like with the options that you had. Like I said, I think it looks a lot like Derrick Rose out there. And it's just awesome. No, I think it's going to be a great release. And like I said, I would love before the end of the year, once it's complete, to do an NLSC tournament on that game.
We can obviously do that over Parsec, as you said. Well, we naturally be doing it over Parsec, but as far as hosting those people's games, but Live 96 is pretty easy to get a hold of. It runs in DOSBox very well. There's a guide on the NLSC. We want to have some more guides this year about getting those old games to run. That's some of the content that we'll be doing this year. People have expressed interest in that, especially those games from the early 2000s, the ones that used secure ROM, the secure ROM drivers, which has been no longer supported by Windows 10. So you have to use some other workarounds to get that to work. So we'll put some more guides out there. And we've had a guide, a shout out to Matt, who has put out some guides for that, which I'll be borrowing and crediting some of the information to him, because he's worked out a lot of great stuff in that respect. But no, as we've said before, it's going to be another fun year of basketball gaming. Of course, there is going to be a new 2K coming out, and with that in mind, it's time to open up the mailbag.
To the mailman, the pump fake. What an unbelievable dunk!
And Derek, the prompt you put out this week was the wish list for NBA 2K23.
Yeah, I love the interaction with that question. There were so many people that chimed in, giving their thoughts on, you know, what, you know, 2K either needs to do away with or needs to improve on or needs to add to the game. I was really happy to see that, you know, people want the focus more on basketball. They want to focus more on allowing, you know, more customization as well. You know, more of a focus on accuracy. So we got responses on Discord. We got responses on, you know, on Twitter, et cetera. So I know you have them in front of you. So let's hear them.
I mean, more customization. Again, you can get Crocs for your My Player. What more customization do you need?
Oh, my God. I still can't believe that's a thing. Well, I mean, I can believe it, but I just don't want to believe it, I guess.
Yeah. So let's tip things off with Cavs 4872, of course, participating in our tournaments as well, and a great member of the forum, says more retro teams, which will sadly never happen. Well, they will add some, but not enough. And this is something that we've talked about before, of course, the retro teams would like to see. And it does feel like that they've kind of slowed down on that, or they're adding teams that are too recent, they're not really retro, and then they ironically end up losing players because they're current players when those teams get licensed, and then they're out of the league, and then they're no longer licensed. So we've actually got more complete teams from the 80s than we do, or the 90s, than we do the ones from the mid-2010s. And also along the same lines, Jamal Smalls, at MidwestKing_100 on Twitter. Shout out to you, as always. It would be really nice if they could add a fresh set of classic teams from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. Perhaps five teams from the 80s, five teams from the 90s, and five teams from the 2000s. Yeah, I absolutely agree with suggestions of more retro teams, as long as they're done correctly.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem is I think there's a great selection of classic teams in there overall. I do think that there's definitely some misses as far as ones that they've added, certainly ones that don't make sense to be in the game and that they only added in there because they maybe had the rights or licenses and whatnot. You know, teams like the mid-2000s Grizzlies, like that didn't really make much sense to me, etc. But I think that my biggest problem with the stock teams that are in there is the fact of accuracy, which we've talked about on many episodes before, which I've screamed from the rooftops on Twitter about. The fact that they're made so poorly, the players are made poorly, the teams are made poorly, they're not accurate signature wise, a lot of copy and paste jobs done, they don't play the right way on the floor, they're often incredibly sluggish, stuff like that. So that's my biggest problem with the stock teams. As far as adding new teams, you know, I think it's criminal that the 82, 83, 76ers haven't made their way into the game yet.
Yep.
You know, the champion, their only championship in the 80s and whatnot. And I think it's a great team. I think that they have so many of those players and whatnot. I think that that would be a strong team to put in. I'd love to see a Seattle Supersonics team, maybe with Ray Allen and Rashard Lewis, be another good team. And I think they have a lot of those players, etc. So no, I wouldn't mind seeing some new retro teams added. Do I think that they're going to do it? Probably not. I think that this is what we're going to get maybe for the next couple of years, but hey, I could be wrong.
You brought up an interesting point there, and something that I've talked about in articles and on the podcast, and I mentioned it on Twitter as well in response to Midwest King, is that there are teams in the game, and you brought up one, the 83 76ers, that they could change what's in the game already. For example, the 98 Spurs, good team. You know, it's fun to have them in there, and it made sense for NBA's greatest, the challenge that they were having. But it would make more sense now to roll them forward to the 99 Spurs, the first championship team. Just making some teams that are a bit more, you know, they included them for a reason to begin with, but they haven't really updated them through the years, and now they don't make as much sense. And you could roll them forward a year or roll them back a year, and there'd be much better squads, either because they're champions or just a better team top to bottom, more fun to play with. I think they should be doing that, just taking some, as much as I hate to lose content, I think some of that content needs to be altered so that it makes more sense.
Right. Another good example of that would be like the 90-91 Blazers still being in there instead of 91-92. You know, 91-92 is the team that went to the finals.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. And they could also easily add the 91-92 Bulls in there. If people wanted to face off, right? You know, teams like the 66, 67, 76ers would be great to get a younger Chamberlain in there because we've always only had that older Lakers version in there. That would be a good one. How about Rick Barry and Nate Thurman? You know, they're both in my team. Why not see if you can get the like 66, 67 Warriors in there and whatnot? So there's definitely a lot of teams that people would like to see and would use if they were in the game. And I think that 2K could do it if they actually made that content a priority. And sadly, like we've talked about so many times before, it's not a high priority for them.
Well, it doesn't make money. My team does. And restricting those players to my team, the only way that you can play with them is to collect them in my team, which means either grinding for them or paying for packs and hoping to pay for pack after pack and hoping to open it, to pull one, I should say, to pull out a card in a pack opening. You know, that makes money for them. But this other stuff, same as creating a challenge mode, like a Jordan's, like the Jordan Challenge or NBA's Greatest, or almost said Jordan's Greatest, then. Those two modes from 2K11 and 2K12. They're not going to bring that stuff back because it doesn't... I mean, I think it would sell the game. People would like it, but it doesn't make them any extra money. It doesn't make recurrent revenue. And I know we harp on that topic a lot, but it's worth mentioning, especially when we talk about wishlists, Derek, that when you look at feasibility, if it doesn't make 2K that recurrent revenue, it's not going to be a high priority, sadly.
Well, of course not. Yeah, we've talked about that with my team and my career and whatnot. It's just about getting people online and getting exposed to those gambling mechanics and making them feel like they have to spend more money either to upgrade their player or to get the latest, get more packs or get, you know, a card they want in my team, etc. So no, that's definitely the case. But I think that there would be more goodwill towards the franchise and towards that retro content that's existing in the game if they actually made it accurately.
No doubt.
Like, they actually put some love into that, and if it was a higher priority, but like we said, sadly it isn't.
On the subject of retro content, DZulu at DevoKhan on Twitter, shout out to you. Love to see Sonics and Thunder all-time teams separated, as well as Hornets Bobcats, to avoid having players in uniforms they never played in. With games played qualifiers, I made all-time team 17-man rosters by adding two two-way players each. 96 Sonics is my all-time Sonics roster. So, again, that's something else that they've obviously combined the Thunder and Sonics, as he says, and the Hornets and the Bobcats. But that does lead to some inaccuracies of representing the all-time for that franchise. And I know why they do it, but it would be nice if they did have those extra two teams so you could have the Hornets and Bobcats separate from the Pelicans or whatnot, and the Sonics and the Thunder.
Or DZulu, how about they give you the option to add your own teams, add new teams.
Even better.
And you can work on that branding and you can work on that court. And that would make you spend more time on the game and you could customize the things the way you want. So if they don't have like the rights to be able to do that, like if they don't have the rights to get that Seattle Supersonic stuff in there, etc., how about bringing those My NBA tools of court creator, jersey creator, and all of that stuff into the offline mode? So you can use it in regular roster creation, because that would solve your problem right there. And I know you from your comments that one of the first things you would do on that game is jump into that offline editor, that offline roster editor, outside of My NBA, and you would create that court and you would create those jerseys and you'd throw them on the floor.
100%. Jack Duca, I apologize if I've mispronounced that, at J_Duca on Twitter. Shout out to you. Something probably nobody asked for or wants, real G League arenas. Again, that extra detail.
Yeah, again, I'll say, you know, what if they gave you that option like they do in My NBA to create your own stadium, right?
Indeed.
Maybe you could create the G League arenas and whatnot. But I do, I understand, you know, asking for that. And obviously, you know, the people at 2K have more access to, whether it be pictures or being able to go to the arena themselves to make it accurate, etc. Obviously, it would be better if they actually worked on that and implemented it as part of the base game. But if they, again, if they didn't, if there was licensing issues around it, I mean, think about the licensing issues they must have. They haven't been able to call the Celtics court TD Garden ever, right?
Exactly.
It's never, they can't even call one of the main NBA teams, you know, the most successful NBA team of all time. They can't even call it TD Garden. But
NBA Live has exclusive rights to Madison Square Garden, don't they? Because 2K doesn't call it, 2K call it Knicks Arena, don't they?
It's something like that, yeah. I'd have to boot up the game. I'm not 100% sure. I'd have to boot up the game. Right, exactly. If there's licensing issues and stuff and they can't put it in the base game, give us the customization so we can do so.
I do remember talking to Sean O'Brien, former executive producer on NBA Live, when John Gausming and I were talking to him, and I think, I'm not sure if it was on the show or maybe off air, he might have mentioned, because we talked about getting the G League in the game and all the arenas and such, and he said, look, that'd be a great thing to do, and obviously 2K has since gone on to add G League teams, But he actually said at the time, there's actually a lot of licensing issues with those arenas and naming rights and everything else and accuracy and what's, etc. So, and that's just the G League. Obviously, as you mentioned, it happens with the NBA as well. The Pacers for a long time had to be Indiana Pacers Arena, Houston Rockets Arena, New York Knicks Arena in various games when they couldn't get the naming rights to those arenas. So it is a thing. But to your point, the more that they can get in the game by default, absolutely, is so much better. I wrote an article recently about the helping hand of default assets. It's so much better to have those assets on hand. Yes, we can mod a lot of stuff in, and even if we have the tools in the in-game to, like the rebranding tools in MyNBA and My League, My Gym, etc., it's great to have those, but to have those assets on hand to work with saves so much time.
Yeah, also, before we move on to the next question, you know, if you want to play G League mods, from what I can gather, there have been a couple amazing ones made for NBA 2K14 PC. So if you don't own it, get your hands on NBA 2K14 PC. Still has great gameplay, still has really good graphics. You could always install one of those G League mods and hit the ground running with accurate arenas, floors, and all of that stuff.
Indeed. And it is the last game, of course, that you can get a disc release for, 2K14.
Yep, there you go. So, yeah, and I'm pretty sure it's not overpriced or anything like that.
I recently, because I only had a digital copy, I recently added it to my collection for about $5 Australian. So, yeah, you can get a pretty cheap copy if you look around.
Yeah, so you can get
it. Teddy Bear the Gamer at 317 Teddy Bear on Twitter. Shout out to you. Of course, some great highlights coming from you for the top 10. Time to put the focus back on sim gameplay. All the focus has been on my player career for years. 100%. And of course, you know, just to throw that out there, as I know you like it, Teddy Bear, get rid of that alley-oop meter. It was also a big one as well.
Yeah, Teddy's, he's a friend of the show. He was the number one player this week. He's always a great contributor to the top 10 and has some good ideas about the games as well. Yeah, I agree. You know, focus back on that 5-on-5 gameplay. You know, you can really tell what the focus was when you go back to games like 2K17 and prior, you know, 2K16, 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, etc. You can tell that the focus was on the NBA action, was on that 5-on-5 experience and making that as fun and enjoyable as possible on the sticks. And, you know, even the crowd noise and whatnot, the atmosphere as well was better, and the sound effects were better, all of that stuff. Like, yeah, I completely agree. They're so focused on the single player experience. They're so focused on getting people online into those, you know, sometimes how it feels, pay to win modes and whatnot, that the NBA has kind of fallen along the wayside. And that's too bad, because it really impacts the experience. And, you know, one of the ways that it impacts the experience is all of the badges. And they added a bunch more for this year. I think there's around 70 or 80 badges now in the game, and those are artificial boosts, and a lot of times that takes away from not only skill gap but also realism. So I can definitely agree with Teddy on that, and yes, they need to get rid of the alley-oop and contact dunk meter because it's ridiculous.
I think it speaks volumes when you look at their social media, the official NBA 2K Twitter, and you see obviously they're promoting the gear that's in the game, the accessories, Crocs, you know, the clothing that you can get and the premium clothing brands, or they're promoting the overpowered cards that you can get in My Team. There's less focus these days. They still do mention when there's a roster update and who, you know, who's going up and over a rating, who's going down, etc. They don't not mention that. They will mention that from time to time when there's a major update. But that used to be so much of a focus, the NBA content. And you can just tell from what they're actually focusing on. It's the 2K League, it's the clothing, it's the cards, and oh, by the way, yes, there's some stuff happening with the real NBA as well, but, you know, that's just a thing. Well, that's how it feels, anyway. And you can see how much that focus has changed from being that hardcore NBA sim and to this to Fortnite with basketball. It sounds very glib to say that. It sounds like I'm exaggerating, but sometimes it feels that way. And clearly, there's a lot of gamers that prefer that sim style and that dedication to the NBA and realism, etc., that are feeling that. And yeah, I would absolutely love to see that that focus go back to that sim aspect and the core gameplay experience and not the online competitive scene. That's important. You do need to cater to that to some extent, but they're catering to that at the expense of the core gameplay and the core sim aspects of gameplay. And also, when you talk about the online competitive scene, there's issues there as well. The mechanics that they have in place at the moment aren't necessarily good for online competition. You know, the zigzag cheese and the curry slide cheese, etc.
It encourages, it actually encourages improper play.
Absolutely.
To be honest. Yeah. It's not real skill gap. It encourage you could play against somebody who is, you know, far less knowledgeable about the game and who's not as skilled on the sticks, and you could get blown out by them.
Absolutely. They know how to exploit it. Yeah.
Cheesing, right. And because maybe they have 70 badges and you have 30, which is an artificial boost, right?
The build, the meta. They've been able to game the meta.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, they're just hurting skill gap and they're hurting the actual competitive scene, and it's really frustrating. And I think that what happens is when they focus so much on that single player use and all the builds and whatnot, it really takes away from the 5-on-5 gameplay, that cohesive gameplay and that realism that should come with 5-on-5 basketball.
And it's funny because the things they're focusing on, the cosmetic items, the clothing, the Crocs, whatever, that doesn't help the online scene either. And I'd also like to see them move away from, you know, going back and playing 2K14 my career as I did, seeing that focus on the experience of being an NBA player. And now you've got to go and you've got to participate in being an off-court influencer. You know, you're participating in fashion shows and they say, oh, you don't have to buy VC. You can just farm VC by doing fashion shows. I don't want to do fashion shows in a basketball game. What was that Ronnie 2K said? Well, that he tweeted out about 5 years ago? This is more than a Barbie dress-up game. Well, you know what? 2K22 is leaning much more towards being a Barbie dress-up game than 2K17 was, quite frankly. That's the point we're getting to, that there's all this extracurricular stuff that has nothing to do with basketball, even very little to do with being a basketball player, unless you're Ben Simmons, I suppose, and more interested in being a socialite, just throwing that out there. But yeah, there's so much that's not to do with the NBA or even basketball in general that we need to get back to that. You know, it can't be Fortnite with basketball thrown in, quite frankly.
Yeah, I can't remember which NBA coach it was. It might have been Steve Kerr that I was listening to. You talk about the socialite aspect. He said that the NBA players, like, as soon as they get into the locker room at halftime of a basketball game, of a professional NBA basketball game, they are on their cell phones, like all the players. Like, come on.
You're focused
and all that stuff. And that's wild to me. And that just shows how much things have changed. Because they're at halftime on their cell phones looking at social media. You know what I mean? When they should be focused on a basketball game. And that's wild to me.
So speaking of gameplay, @_ShowtimeZach says, make it more arcade like 2K19 and 2K17. Also, the way you made builds was good. Having a primary and secondary while they choose your badges made everyone play differently. I would disagree that 2K19 and 2K17 were arcade, although I have very specific definitions of what makes arcade gameplay. I certainly would like it to be more like 2K19 or 2K17, especially 2K17, quite frankly. Maybe not with less offensive fouls and losing the ball on body steals in 2K17. That was a little bit too exaggerated in that game. I definitely like the gameplay to be more like 2K19 or 2K17, however you want to categorize that.
Yeah, I'm going to take his statement a little bit differently than you, as I think I kind of get what he's getting at. I actually think NBA 2K22 though is actually more arcade than both games. I can literally from the perimeter do the same crossover or dribble move with a good ball handler and get by my guy like almost every time, as long as I'm using a good ball handler, and I can do that over and over and over again. I think that also it's very arcade in NBA 2K22. All the suction, that's not sim, you know, all that gravity and suction issue of being dragged into other players, whether you're on offense or defense. I think I find that incredibly arcade. There's nothing sim about that. You know, the skating all over the floor, that's very arcade. That's not, you know, that's not sim at all. You shouldn't be floating or skating all over the floor. Not being able to control your guy on defense with the poor foot planning, I consider that very arcade. So I guess it depends on your definition of arcade. I will say, though, if you're talking about make the game more fun, almost like arcade type fun, and put more NBA action and actual basketball action back into the games, that's where I will agree. If what you're talking about is saying, you know, I want the game to be more fun, I want it to be more loose, I want it to be more, more explosive dunks, more, quicker first steps, all of that stuff, I absolutely agree with that. Like, if you're associating arcade with fun in that way, then I can agree with what you said.
No, that's a good point. And I think I would definitely agree with the underlying point of making it more like 2K19 or indeed 2K17 or some mix of the two. By the way, 2K18 was not a mix of the two, certainly not the mix I want anyway, but I would definitely prefer a game that's closer to those in gameplay and feel than 2K22. As far as the builds go, I know this is not really your area because you don't play My Career, but it's funny that the more control they've given us over builds in recent years, or the changes they've made, it's supposed to have opened things up, but it's really just made things more homogenized. And I really do feel that the build system in 2K17, 18, 19, as much as there were problems with 18, the build system was okay. But the build system we had at the time, pre-pie charts, pre-what they're doing with on next-gen at the moment, was actually better, and we had some more viable builds that were fun to play with online and offline. And that's a big problem, getting that build that is fun to play with and effective. So the changes they've tried to make with the build system, they've tried to give us more choices, and they kind of do, but as far as viable choices, it's actually led to an even more homogenized style of online play. So yeah, I think that's a great suggestion too.
Well, in my opinion, they're reinventing the wheel for no reason. They're reinventing it just to make changes, right? To promote something new.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the way I look at it. Because, you know, you went back and you played NBA 2K14, My Career, and just the structure of it and the way it felt was great. In fact, if you go back and you look at the threads when they were talking about NBA 2K14, they were having a blast, right? Like, way more positive comments than negative comments. And the same with, like, NBA 2K16 and NBA 2K17. So basically it's them, you know, just trying to make changes for the sake of making changes and to promote something new and exciting and all of that stuff. And I think reinventing the wheel often for no reason.
No, that's a great way of putting it. Absolutely. Speaking of the online arena, Till at Tillhouse_ on Twitter, shout out to you. Get rid of Got Next in the playground or park. If I had one option for feedback, that would be it. I actually wrote an article, Derek. Imagine that. I wrote an article about Got Next, Gotta Go in from my park, as it was called at the time, the park. That was back in 2017, for 2K17, I said that. Because I was mostly playing 2K Pro-Am, but when we were taking a break from 2K Pro-Am, we'd go and play some park. And Got Next was literally the worst part of playground. Now, this is one of those situations where some people will say, oh, you don't get it. You know, the Got Next is representing going down and waiting to play at the park. No, I get it. But it is literally simulating the most tedious part of an activity, waiting in line to partake in the activity. This is not going to be Line Simulator 2K23. It's going to be NBA 2K23. So it's one of those systems where conceptually you understand it, but in practice, in execution, you're just standing around waiting. You got people jumping off because they don't like the look of the clothes you're wearing, or your overall rating, or your rep level, or whatever, your legend, your level in the season, whatever. There's no matchmaking at all. It's just messy. It's messy, and it also leads to a lot of waiting around. You see a lot of people just standing, they're not playing.
Can you imagine if they did that with like the NBA modes, and they were like you're playing like Play Now, or you're even playing just connected with somebody online, and they were like, all right, well, you have to wait for this commercial break, because that's what happens in real life.
Exactly.
All right, well, this is a real timeout. You're not allowed to skip this timeout. You have to wait either the full 20 seconds or a full 20 or the full timeout in order to get back on the floor. There's going to be a full play review. You have to wait the exact amount of time that it would take in real life normally to review a play. Like, that's how I look at that. Like, certain things need to be skipped in a video game, and because they just shouldn't be in there. And I would agree that is absolutely one of them. Like you said, I think one thing that it would really help in this regard is actual proper matchmaking. And I think you've harped on that over and over and over again on prior episodes.
Indeed, absolutely. It's funny that you mentioned the timeout, though. In My Career games, you can't actually skip the first 15, 20 seconds, I think it is now, of the timeout, because it's basically a Gatorade commercial. That's what we've come to.
So ridiculous, yeah. Yeah, I'm seeing more ads and stuff like that in NBA 2K and in other video games and everything, and it's really sad what that's come to, what that's come down to.
But the Got Next concept, you know, it makes sense in theory, because it's simulating that experience of going down to the park. But again, it's literally simulating the most tedious part of an activity, waiting to participate in that activity. At least with the 2K Pro-Am, for example, you're in the arena with your teammates, you can shoot around, you can mess around. And they kind of have that on next gen, where you can shoot around. They did add that when you're waiting for opponents to show up. But there's still too many problems with people backing out. There's just so many problems with the online scene that it's such an easy fix Well, it's easy for me to say because I don't have to program the thing. But you can see that there's concepts that other games do that they should implement to improve the online scene. They've just ruined 2K Pro-Am. They've driven all these squads to the wreck, where these full squads that are organized squads are just feasting on collections of random players that are teaming up together. There's so much toxicity. There's just so much they need to do with the online scene. The online scene should be so much better than it is in so many ways. And a lot of that has to do with gameplay, but there's also the culture that is being cultivated by their approach, and that elitist approach, and that gatekeeping approach that I've talked about before, and got next, or just even just having to wait around for a game like that. It's they need to fix that, because online could and should be so much better.
Yeah, like I said, I'm just really glad I stay away from that scene. And, you know, I connect with people on Parsec, and, you know, I play NBA Live 96 with you, and I play 2K17 with my brothers and other basketball games with them. And, you know, I'm doing the NBA Jam tournament and all that stuff. I'm just glad that I'm playing those things and actually enjoying myself, as opposed to handling that stress. Like, I wouldn't want the stress of jumping online.
There's a reason that I've gotten away from it, and why I'm in no rush to go back to it. But that being said, I would dip my toe in again if it was better. And even if I don't, I want it to be better for the people who are still enjoying it or want to enjoy it.
Oh, 100%. That's called caring about other people's experiences.
Exactly.
Like a lot of the stuff that we talk about in relation to the newer games, you and I don't even play them that often, whether it be the modes like My Team and whatnot, or jumping online on My Career, which you've gone away from. But we do care about other people's experiences with the games.
And we've said it before, but it bears repeating, because a lot of people don't seem to get it, unfortunately. Care about your fellow gamers. Stand with your fellow gamers, not the company. I mean, there are some criticisms that people make of the company that are unfair. By all means, call them out. We want to make our criticisms fair and meaningful and accurate. But always stand with your gamers over the company that wants your money. You know, I can't complain than that.
100%. Not enough people speak up about the issues. Luckily, sometimes people's real feelings do reflect in ratings, whether it be Steam ratings or Metacritic ratings and whatnot. But not enough people speak up. And unfortunately, too many people side with the company, or just say, well, it's not a big deal, or, well, you need to adjust, or why don't you just not play the game?
Yeah, it's just so weird to me that people will point at something that's technically accurate, technically correct. You know, not to go on too much of a tangent here, but again, the whole situation of you don't have to buy VC, for example. Technically true. Technically accurate. But the game is designed in a way that is either going to make you grind really hard or want to spend. And so that means that it's not prioritizing a fun experience. That's the issue. Yes, you don't have to, but the game is trying to get you to. And it's not designed in a way that's fun if you don't. And people just, you know, to use a phrase that we love to use here on the NLC podcast, they don't look at the big picture.
Yeah, to put it plainly, greed has gotten in the way of fun.
Perfect.
At this point.
So here's an interesting one from our friend MP3, from Mike, at Mike Pritchard on Twitter. Shout out to you. Would it be wrong to say on my 2K wish list was NBA Live 23? No, I think I can relate to that.
Yeah, somebody else actually agreed and said that that's their wish as well. They wish that they could get some NBA Live 23. There needs to be competition in this space. There needs to be more variety. People deserve another basketball gaming option after all of these years. And it is really sad that we haven't heard anything from EA Sports as far as making a comeback. I do think that the series will come back eventually, if not this year, maybe next year. I don't think it's dead yet. But it is criminal that nobody else has come into the basketball gaming space, and NBA 2K is the only simulation 5-on-5 NBA option. I don't think that's bad to say at all. I think it would up NBA 2K's game. I think it would make them think twice about some of the bad decisions they've made, or decisions in general that they've made with the direction of the series, whether it be the online scene or the neglecting of retro teams, etc. That's one of my wishes as well. I hope we get another option, whether it be NBA Live or another company.
Well, you look at what 2K was doing as it was trying to overtake Live in sales, and it was already getting there in reception, in rate, user and Metacritic ratings and whatnot. they were just going so hard in making it as realistic as possible and making it as detailed as possible and adding all these little touches that were really delighting hardcore basketball fans and also bringing in more casual gamers as well, but were really just focusing on the basketball. They were giving us the Jordan Challenge and NBA's Greatest. They were giving us retro teams. They were putting more effort into the rosters. When you looked at the old all-decade teams, you had different versions of the players, like a 90s version and an 80s version of Clyde Drexler, for example. So you'd have different faces, things like that. Just all that attention to detail. And it wasn't, I mean, things have changed in the gaming world, obviously, and 2K are going to get on those trends, like any developer, like any publisher. But you can see what they were doing when they were trying to get ahead of Live and then to run it into the ground, what they were doing with the quality of the games. And without that competition, without that driving force, without that, without painting NBA Live and EA there as the enemy to destroy, they're kind of resting on their laurels a bit. I'm not saying the developers aren't working hard and the programmers and whatnot, but the focus, the vision of the game has changed.
And the sales will always be there, right? Because there's no other option for them to buy. That's the thing, is, you know, as far as like they're going to hit over 10 million in sales every single time NBA 2K, a new 2K gets released, because people, these kids, young adults and whatnot, people our age, etc., love basketball. Like, they want a basketball gaming option. They want a new basketball video game, and that's their only option. So they're going to buy it. So those sales are always going to be there. And that's why I can't stand the whole, we hit 10 million in sales and people are like, oh, well, NBA 2K is still popular. They got to be doing something right. Well, the reason why those sales are, there's context behind that. The reason why those sales are what they are is because there's only one option for NBA 5-on-5 gamers. Right. So one real option for people to go online and play the way that, you know, NBA 2K allows them to play online and those connected modes and whatnot.
Well, I think it's summed up by what Culture Gaming, Lady Culture, said when in response to the prompt of the 2K23 wish list, says, trying to find an answer for this, but I'm so cynical with 2K at this point. They don't seem to innovate. When they do, it's really bad and complicated controls-related stuff. All they care about is online money modes. They have a solid, if flawed, gameplay base that they've built on top of for years and years, but when has it actually gotten a lot better? Been waiting years for that huge gameplay or graphics leap, but I don't think it's happening. I'm afraid there won't be big changes until there's a new competitor on the market, and that change will either come from the new competitor or 2K waking up and putting in real work again. If there isn't, I think you'll see 2K become Madden, just releasing a stagnant game that half the audience seem to hate year after year. And I mean for like a 7 to 10 year stretch. That's what Madden is, and that's where 2K is heading, because neither have competition. I mean, you know, round of applause. That quite frankly sums it up.
No, I mean, she's right. I mean, and that's one of the biggest things with Madden right now, and that's why a lot of the, you know, football gaming fan base is frustrated with Madden, is because they believe that the gameplay hasn't changed much. They haven't innovated gameplay wise, and they haven't, you know, really made any positive differences. You know, I went back and I have Madden 08 for the PC, and I just reinstalled it recently and installed a mod and whatnot. And I was playing it and I was like, wow, this game, Madden 08, I think it's a pretty good game, but it feels an awful lot like the newest Madden, which I also own. And that's crazy because those games are separated by about 15 years, right? So, I completely agree with that. I think that the gameplay has gone actually in the wrong direction for all the reasons that I've stated. You know, the foot planting is poor, the gravity issues, like the suction issues, the video games have kind of lost their fun factor and whatnot. So I can see that 2K is already at that point that she mentioned. It's already kind of like Madden at this point. And they need to make changes, positive changes to the gameplay and to that online scene.
And Sticky Fingers echoes that as well. Sticky Fingers FR on Twitter, of course, and in the forum. Shout out to you. About 2K23, at this point, to be honest, I have no expectations. Whatever I wish, it will not happen. 2K/VC is so greedy now, and due to those fake next-gen consoles, the lack of contenders, the game will probably be mostly the same for the next 3 to 4 years. We're feeling that cynicism now. And I've always said with the wish list, look, put it out there because the worst that can happen is that it doesn't happen. Right? Like, we will not lose anything by putting out suggestions. And I still stick to that. I still believe that. It's worth doing, throwing it out there. Because, hey, it's something to talk about with our favorite hobby, and we can make suggestions that, even if some of them get into the game, it could make the game better. But that being said, I can't blame people for feeling cynical, because I feel that too.
Well, his feelings right there about the game staying stagnant and just like be or getting worse and being that way for the next 3 or 4 years, he's not alone in thinking that.
Not at all.
People have been talking about that over the last couple of years, and look, over the last couple of years, it hasn't really improved. And I think that he could be right. That could be the direction. You know, I was actually talking with Sticky Fingers today. We were talking on Discord. He had stated, like I do, you know, we actually think that the graphics are more realistic and enjoyable on NBA 2K19 for PS4 and PC and whatnot than they are on the next gen consoles. I think that the next gen console makes the game look too saturated. The lighting doesn't look natural at all. The body types aren't as good either in the next gen version as NBA 2K19. There's less muscle on them. So, you know, and I was sharing screenshots with him from NBA 2K9, just saying 19, excuse me, just saying like, look at this, this does not look worse than next gen. I think that next gen overall was a pretty decent disappointment as far as graphics and presentation go. I don't think that it wowed like when we went to NBA 2K14 and whatnot for Xbox One. And I really don't think in a lot of ways that it's even an improvement over the PS4 era as far as gameplay, graphics, etc. So I do have that worry, just like him, that as long as there's no competition in the space, that for the next 3 or 4 years, we could be just getting a very similar product every year.
Undoubtedly. I think a lot of people, as you said, are feeling that, realizing that. And it's why that frustration is building. The apologists can keep hitting back and saying, oh, whining, crying about this. I saw something on Twitter the other day. Somebody said that the rewards aren't very good in the season rewards for the games, and they're just kind of disappointing. And somebody else was basically saying, oh, you're spoiled, you need to, you know, 2K fans are never happy, and they just want everything that they said. 2K fans won't settle. And I thought, why should you settle? You're buying a product, you want to enjoy it. If the content that they're putting through is kind of disappointing and not feeling like it's worth it, that's valuable feedback to say, hey, 2K, you know, this, we want to have fun with the game, but this kind of isn't very fun or rewarding or worth it. But people are saying, oh, because it's free rewards, you can't criticize it. But the whole idea is that it's a fun thing to strive for. So there are so many apologists that are just making excuses for the games and want to categorize their fellow gamers as whiners and complaints. And look, there are some dumb complaints, don't get me wrong. But there's a lot of legitimate, valid, reasonable criticism that's getting thrown out. The baby getting thrown out with the bathwater, if you will. Because people want to defend the company and call other people whiners and complainers, or you're just bitching about it. No, this is a valid complaint.
You know, the way I look at it is there's actually not enough people that speak up and quote-unquote complain. There's not enough people that do it. And then the people that do it, they don't do it properly, and they don't do it in a way that is helpful or constructive. A lot of times it's, your game sucks, right? What does that tell them? Nothing. That just says, you know, your game sucks, that's it. Like, that doesn't tell them what the problem is with the game. Or they'll say, oh, well, this game is trash, or 2K is never going in the right direction, or 2K, you guys made this too complicated, but they never, you know, add context to it. So I think one of the biggest problems is we don't have enough people speaking out about the issues, and the ones that do speak up about the issues don't do it in a constructive and detailed way.
But also, some of the key influences are also very pro 2K in a way that, you know, not trying to pick fights.
Well, that's
here.
That's because how they get their attention. But that's how they get their
that's
attention.
That's right, yeah. If you want to work with 2K, you've got to play ball. You've got to play nice.
Right, and that's how they get their subscribers, right? That's how they get their followers. That's how they get their monetized channels, you know, a ton of people over to those channels. So those people, in my opinion, as far as like being trustworthy, are more often than not compromised.
Agree. Unfortunately. It's a shame, because back in the day, the developers would reach out to people who were willing to be supportive, but also critical as well, and tell them, give them that detailed feedback. But now it's who can promote the game for us to their big audience, and it's
they're basically buying influencers.
Sure, yeah. Who wants a logo? Who wants clout? And this is what is what it leads to. Absolutely, you know, to the point of NBA Live needing that competition and wanting that series that we grew up with coming back. Mike, once again, MP3, says, I wouldn't even know what to write in an NBA Live wish list at this point. Just release a game and we'll take it from there. Also says, EA, NBA Live, the community needs you. We're sharing a gif of Princess Leia from A New Hope. You're my only hope gif. Yeah, pretty much. It feels that way. It feels that way that if we don't have competition, things aren't going to change.
Right, we are going to do a future episode on NBA Live 2023 wish list, just in case it does come back.
Indeed.
So look out for that prompt. I'll put that out over the next couple of weeks, and we can have a long talk about what we'd like to see when they come back, or if they come back. So yeah, that's the way I look at it. Is there needs to be competition in the space, and I agree with both you and Teddy Bear the Gamer. It would be really great for anybody, whether it be EA Sports or somebody else, to come back into that basketball gaming space and actually give 2K a run for their money.
It seems like our only hope, quite frankly.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like the only hope, because I don't think that 2K has any reason right now to really up their game, because, like I said, there's only one option in the space.
With that being said, we are compiling the wish list. We have some responses already. Obviously, we've got these great responses on Twitter as well. So please get involved with the NLSC wish list. Look, I know there's a lot of people compiling wish lists, Derek, but I feel like we can speak on behalf of our community, and we're probably going to cover things that other communities aren't, whether they're about the PC release or gameplay related or modding or whatever. We're going to be able to touch on some things that maybe some other communities don't if they're more online oriented. So get involved with that wish list. Again, I understand the cynicism. I'm kind of with everyone there in that regard. But with that being said, we can put those ideas together. I'll compile them. I'll send them along to the people I know at 2K. We want to get that in ASAP. We won't lose anything by doing it. Of course, you can feel cynical about whether we'll gain anything, but we won't lose anything. So if you do have those ideas, please throw them out there. I'll compile that feedback and I'll send it along.
Right, I agree. And, you know, I want to make a point, a strong point here, is that there have been multiple people plucked from the NLSC community to work for NBA 2K. You have to understand that those developers, those programmers, etc., they are on the NLSC looking at those wish lists and those forums. I can promise you that. People that have not been plucked from the NLSC community, people that we don't even know the names of, I can guarantee that people are looking in on that community. They're looking at that content and they're looking at that wish list thread. So get your wish list ideas out there in that NLSC thread, and don't just talk about this on the NLSC. Get on social media, you know, tag Mike Wang. Even if you don't think it's going to do anything, if you have a good idea, make sure that you're trying to get at these guys and be detailed and tell them what you think that the series needs to do moving forward.
It may not be implemented, but if an idea stays in your head, you can be guaranteed that it's not going to be heard.
Right, exactly. The worst that can happen is they ignore you.
Yeah, they're not going to break down your door and start roughing you up. How dare you ask for more retro teams?
Yeah. I did want to say something, actually. Props to Andrew. I want to do this live. Andrew is sending me a late Christmas/birthday present, so a belated gift. He's sending me NBA Live 96 for the PC because I don't have it.
Indeed, so it'll be part of your big collection too. Just wanted to send you a little gift. You know, thank you for helping out with the content around the site and the moderating and whatnot, and being my co-host here on the NLSC podcast. And yeah, I know how much you love Live 96, so I found a copy, and it'll be, as soon as it arrives in my house, I'll be able to go down to the post office and send it to your place.
No, I really appreciate it. Thank you. And, you know, it's been great. I've really enjoyed putting content together for the NLSC and seeing people's reactions to that content and then them to being able to get involved. I think one of the things that's going to keep some of these old games alive are things like the top 10 and connecting on Parsec and then the tournaments that we're running. That's going to keep these games alive for as long as we do those features and whatnot. So no, it's definitely been great. And when I get NBA Live 96, you can bet I'll be putting it in and installing it and trying to play it right away on DOSBox. And it will also help with modding because I won't need to keep sending you files in order to plug into the game, as much as you probably enjoy that. I will be plugging them in myself and then just sending you a final product.
Absolutely, but it's that moment of anticipation of firing up the game. Will it work?
Right. What were your thoughts when you saw that Jordan for the first time when it was done?
The one that actually... Well, first of all, you know, the first attempts, I was like, this is still cool to see, because I could see, like, we're getting there. Like, you know what you're doing. This could happen. But when I saw that one that was just, like, more than usable, more than acceptable, the one that we've got that's in there at the moment, I was like, man, this is what we wanted back in the day. And finally... This is why it's worth going back and modding these old games. It's why people go back and make those ROM hacks for NBA Jam, NBA Jam Tournament Edition on Super Nintendo. If you have the tools, this is what makes a retro gaming experience so much fun. And I'm looking forward to putting that out for people, because I think people will see that and finally see a Michael Jordan portrait and just be like, wow, this is what my 10-year-old or 12-year-old self wanted, right?
Yeah, it was also really cool to send you, even though they need a little bit of edits, a little more editing, you know, that Steph Curry and Russell Westbrook. Because seeing Steph Curry and Russell Westbrook in NBA Live 96 and looking like with, you know, all their proper vitals and, you know, with their portraits and whatnot, seeing them look like they're really in the game is mind blowing, right? You go back 20+ years and you pull up that game and people are going to be able to install that roster and use those players and see that. I think it looks great. There's something fun about that.
The only downside is that there's a Y2K problem in Live 96 PC, in that with the draft year, it's the final 2 years that you enter as the data, and it appends it to the 1900s. So you will see things like Steph Curry being drafted in 1909, for example, by the Warriors in 1909. So there's little things like that. But you know what? I think those are the things that people can overlook, because they're going to see a portrait, they're going to be able to play with a modern player in an old game, and it still plays pretty well. It's that old school equivalent of how they play. It's going to represent their play style and everything, and they're going to play like their real life selves to the best of the ability of Live 96 PC, obviously. I'm looking forward to it, to putting it out there.
Right, I believe I got a steal when we were using the Bulls with Derrick Rose, and I went down the other end and I dunked it. And it's like, did I just do that in NBA Live 96 with Derrick Rose?
Yeah.
Because that's pretty awesome. And it looks great in that game. And the hairstyle you gave him is great. I'm really looking forward to working more on this project. I think the portraits are going to take some time. But I think that making it right, making it accurate, and making it really fun to play is the priority.
Undoubtedly. And but to that end, you know, I've never seen somebody miss dunks in NBA Live 96 before.
That was wild. And I think you were the one that missed every single one of them. So I'm just going to blame you, even though you had no way of controlling that and no idea that was going to happen. But yeah, there were a lot of missed layups and missed dunks. You had a missed layup with BJ Armstrong in overtime.
Would have sealed the game.
Yeah, and you were completely wide open, and it just went off the backboard and hit nothing else. And I'm like, what is happening?
I've never seen that happen before in that game. But by the way, this is not an endorsement for a dunk meter.
Right, yeah, exactly. Definitely not an endorsement for that. And we wouldn't mod that in if we could.
Not at all. Not at all. But thank you to everybody who responded to the mailbag prompt this week. Some great suggestions for 2K. Obviously, there is that feeling of cynicism, Derek, understandably so. But there's also a lot of people who are very passionate about basketball gaming, passionate about seeing 2K get better, and do have some great ideas. So it's absolutely worth putting it out there. And fingers crossed that 2K is going to move in that right direction, or what we certainly feel. And I think we have a good case, is the right direction.
So many great responses to that prompt, and so many different people getting into the conversation. That's what we want. The fact that, you know, you guys are tuning in and you know, not only responding to the prompts, but listening to the show and then tuning into the top 10 and tuning into the tournaments and the gameplay videos and stuff like that definitely means a lot to Andrew and I. I think it's been really fantastic. I think 2021 was a really strong year, and there's just going to be a lot of good things happening in 2022.
Absolutely. Stay tuned, because we've got a lot of fun stuff planned. And thank you once again for those mailbag responses. We will keep putting out those prompts on social media. Or if you'd like to write into the show, podcast@nba-live.com, or hit us up in the forum or our various socials, which we will be promoting shortly. With that being said, that has brought us to the end of episode number 410 of the NLSC podcast. We thank you for tuning in. The podcast, of course, comes out every week on the NLSC on Sunday. The NLSC is nba-live.com, of course. You can also find us on all the major podcatching apps and platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, just to name a few, or tune into the show on our YouTube channel. And once again, we would like to connect with you on social media. So Derek, what are your handles, and do you have any of the final words of wisdom for our listeners this week?
No, again, thank you for all the responses to the prompt. Make sure that you're heard. Make sure you reach out to the right people, and make sure that you also go into the NBA 2K23 wish list thread on the NLSC and list your wish list there. Also, please continue to send in your top 10 submissions, because the top 10 has been absolutely fantastic so far this year. You can reach me on Twitter, where I'm the most active, at D4384, or my gaming channel at D43G. And I'm on YouTube, D43, and I'm also a team member on the NLSC at D43.
And don't forget about our other original content throughout the week. Monday tip-off, Way Back Wednesday, the Friday 5, of course. I write those articles not to end the conversation, but to start them. So feel free to comment on those with your thoughts on the topics that I discuss and the games that I'm covering in Wayback Wednesday. Got some great games I'll be covering this year. Got to get to the NBA Street Series still with my retrospectives, and got some other great topics as well. And I'll be putting my thoughts out there and other essays and whatnot, and maybe some video essays this year in Monday Tip-Off. And of course, the Friday Five, the long-running listicle. As I said at the top of the show, I am Andrew in the Forum and Andrew NLSC on Twitter. The NLSC is on Twitter and Facebook at the NLSC. We are NLSC Basketball on Instagram. Our YouTube is NBA Live Series Center. And of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, NBA-live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. But yes, that's all for this week, so thank you once again for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Go get buckets, everyone.